Okay, this will be a continuation from last week, and today will be the last shiur of the year. That's it, you're off. Enjoy. No. Right. This one. Okay. Last week we discussed the Mishnah having to do with Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit, where I told you that the general topic there was malpractice, was what kind of behavior would a woman need to do to make the marriage end, where she would be considered what's called a moredet, although that's not the term the Mishnah uses. It's at which point does she lose the ketuvah? So the topic there was the loss of the ketuvah. So therefore, it gave a number of things. Among the things that it said was the woman who goes with her hair parua b'shuk. The Gemara then questioned, is that really dat yehudit? Because it was one of the things listed as dat yehudit. And the Gemara says, is it midoraita? Isn't it on a Torah level that a woman needs to cover both? Is it on a Torah level that a woman needs to cover her hair? And the Gemara says, no, on a Torah level, she can't go with her hair uncovered, but on the what we'll call the rabbinic level or on the dat yehudit, what the custom of Jewish women is, so then the obligation is to cover it the way that's covered in that particular place. And the impression of the Gemara was, if we'll be perfectly honest, the Gemara gave us the impression that she needs to do both. She needs to cover her hair, and that's the way the Rambam understood it. She needs to cover her hair the way that, therefore, it's not uncovered, and then have an additional covering in order to keep the dat yehudit as well. And that most likely is the reason why you will still, to this very day, see certain women walking around with not one, but two head coverings. What I want to discuss today is perhaps a flip side, perhaps unrelated, or perhaps a parallel universe, as it were. And we'll read the Gemara, we'll understand right away why it's related. Over here, it's a Gemara Brachot. The Gemara Brachot is speaking about certain parts of a woman which, if it is uncovered, it is problematic. Now, why is it problematic? The main topic over here is really, as we'll see, is problematic for a man. That doesn't necessarily tell us what the law is regarding a woman, but perhaps we can extrapolate. Amar Rav Yitzchak, in the first source, Gemara Brachot, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Tefach Be'isha Erva. A tefach is this size. Okay. I guess if you're a woman, it's even smaller. It's the same thing.
Wait,
it's more or less. A tefach would be more or less this size. What?
A man's fist. A tefach is more or less a man's fist, not any
fist. A tefach is more or less like this. Amar Rav Yitzchak, tefach be'isha erva. Yeah, that's okay. tefach be'isha erva. A fist of woman is erva. Okay, this is a hand breath. That's what this is. Lemai, the Gemara says, regarding what? What is the topic? What are we talking about? So it says, if we're talking about looking at a woman, we have another tradition. Regarding Milchemet Midyon, when it gave a list of all the things that they captured, it listed the intimate apparel together with the outside apparel. Why did it list them together? That whoever looks at something which is outside, even a small pinky of a woman, is as if he looked at her most intimate part. So slow down a second. What did the Gemara just now say? It started off saying that a tefach of a woman is considered to be erva. Now, we don't know what the word erva means yet, and we don't know why we're discussing this. And the Gemara is further questioning, why are you giving me a shear which is a tefach, when we have a tradition that looking at that even a smallest part of a woman, not a tefach, even less than that, is considered as looking at something which is intimate. Now, one thing that we'll need to figure out here, aside from what the topic is, meaning why the Gemara is discussing it, what we're also going to have to figure out is what does looking mean? Because is all looking created equal? Or let me put it this differently. As women, have you ever felt that certain men were looking at you in a way which you thought nothing of? Or have you ever seen a man looking at you in a way that you thought was completely inappropriate? You're shaking it. Not anymore. Sorry. But you still remember. So that's the next stage is when you don't remember anymore. So then the question is all looking equal? So that's and what is the definition of looking? Or for that matter, what is the definition over here of mistakel? Continue. The Gemara says, no, what are we really talking about? Ela be'ishto. That when the Gemara said tefach be'isha erva, what we're talking about? One's own wife. Ula kriyachma. And we're talking about the saying of kriyachma. So therefore, the conclusion of the Gemara, if it would have ended right here, would have been that regarding a man looking at his, well, it's interesting, because the first thing doesn't say anything about looking. It says tefach be'isha erva, which means that if a tefach of a woman is seeable, then the man should not say Kriyat Shema. That doesn't mean that a tefach of a woman is not allowed at any time whatsoever. What it means is that this law is really trying to tell us what is the appropriate background or scene or setting that a man should have when he says Kriyat Shema. So Kriyat Shema is prayer, which is fulfillment of perhaps of a Torah law of saying Shema. And therefore, when you say the Shema, there needs to be a proper atmosphere for it. So therefore, it's saying is that to see even one's own wife, a tefach, even of one's own wife, would be inappropriate when one would say Shema. Okay, and that would be the whole thing. Ah, what about the other thing? The other thing was, le'istikule, but to look at a woman otherwise, even the smallest part. Again, we still need to know what looking means. So that would be a problem anytime. Okay, the Gemara now continues. Amar Rav Chista. Rav Chista said, "Shok be'isha erva." He said, "The shok of a woman is erva." Now, I do have one problem over here, and that is, I don't know what a shok is. It could be you know what a shok is. It could be when you go to the butcher and get shok. So, I will say again. I don't know what a shok is. I'm glad that all of you know what a shok is. There's two possibilities. One possibility is that the shok is from the knee down to the ankle. The other possibility is that it's from the knee up to the hip. Those are two possibilities of the shok. Based upon biblical Hebrew, it is more likely that it's from the knee downward. Just because that's biblical Hebrew, that doesn't necessarily tell me what the halakha is. If you look at the second page that I gave you, that page that stands by itself, the Mishnah Berurah writes, source 24, the problem is the from the regal to the from the foot from the to the. The regal would be literally the foot, right where your toes are. I mean, a regal at a shok, v'hu ad hamakom shenikra kni. So he says, from the regal to the shok, he's understanding that the shok begins at the knee. So you don't have to go any further than this. This is the Mishnah Berurah saying that the problem of shok is thigh. That's how he defines it. The Chazon Ish brings a whole bunch of proofs, going back to verses, which I told you, there are many you can find, verses, Mishnah, Gemaras, and pretty much proves that the shok is really the shin. Obviously, the difference of opinion would be over here, if only a miniskirt is not allowed, or if all skirts need to be down to the ankle. Right, that would be the difference. At the very end, the Chazon Ish, despite proving his case pretty conclusively, backs down and says, okay, but anyway, but most of the poskim have always said that it's from the knee higher, so therefore he backs down. And other rabbis of B'nai Brak were quite upset with him for backing down. They wanted him. So the issue would be that, I mean, that's why certain women wear, I don't know what the proper name for it is, the bulletproof stockings, because if the, is there a proper name for that?
Opaque.
Thank you. And I don't know if anyone actually tried to shoot, you know, but that would be the reason, is because they are assuming.
You have to shoot, you'd have to look first.
Have extra bullets. And by the way, some of the people doing the best shooting are other women. Okay, so let's recognize that as well. So if the Chazon Ish would have ruled that way, so then that would have been far more impressive, but he didn't. And so therefore the bottom line is both he and the Mishnah Berurah end up saying that what the Shok actually is from the knee and higher. Obviously, the other problem which remains is what is the status of the poor knee? Is the knee inclusive or exclusive? And you would have very good reason to believe, again, based on verses, that the knee is actually not part of the Shok, and the Shok is from the top of the knee and up. I am not giving any kind of opinion here how long skirts need to be, but based upon what you're reading right over here, he's saying, "Mi prizeh regel ad ha-shok v'hu ad ha-makom shenekra." Excuse me? No, I'm saying there are verses that talk about the knee and then the shok as being two separate things. So if the knee and the shok are two separate things, so that if the knee and the shok are two separate things and you have to cover the shok, then you don't have to cover the knee. Right? But in all good seminaries, you need to wear a skirt which is at least 3 inches longer than the knee when sitting. Okay. Because they didn't look in the Mishnah Berurah or the Chazon Ish. I don't know. Okay. Let's go back to our first source. Let's go back to, we were up to our Shok. No. So let's go back to our Shok. And it brought two nice verses from Yeshayahu, which I actually cut and pasted and put the English also, and it disappeared somehow before the final editing, so I was very surprised. It quotes two verses after the other. One verse is Galei Shok of Rei Naharot, that when you cross the river, you will be revealing your shok. And the next verse, it says, literally the next verse, it says, Tagel ervatcha v'gam terpechtecha. Your nakedness will be revealed. So therefore, one verse said that you're going to reveal the shok, and the next verse continues and says, you've revealed your nakedness. So the implication here is very strong, is that shok equals nakedness. So the proof of the Gemara here is pretty good. Now, you could say, oh, what? Well, it's not a Torah law. It's just bringing a proof from Yeshayahu. No. What the Gemara is doing over here is it knows that certain thing is not allowed, but it's trying to prove what things are not allowed based upon verses and uses of verses that we find. So that's how the Shok got in here. Now, there's a real simple question that all of you should be asking at this point. When it spoke about the Shok, why? It already told us that if we're talking about tefach, well, that's one's own wife. So therefore, it's a tefach. I already have a shear. If I'm talking about someone else, so then it's even etzba ktana. So for what purpose am I being told about shok? What is, if saying a shok is an erva, and again, let's just assume now the shok is a thigh, why bother telling me this? I mean, this should have been simple. Maybe the question is good, maybe it's not good, but it's necessary to ask it anyway. Right. So I'm saying a little thing, then. Right, I'm saying you already said the little finger, so why you don't need to mention thigh? That's the point. Omer Shmuel, kol be'isha erva. Shmuel says the voice of a woman is an erva. Shenemar, as it says, Shirashirim, harini et mar'ech, hashmi'ini et kolech, ki kolech arev umareich naveh, and so on. If you want to read that in English, it says, let me see your countenance, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your countenance is comely. I guess that's good. Okay, next. Rav Sheshit says, Se'ar be'isha erva. The hair of a woman is erva. Shenemar, hine yafa ra'ayati, hinech yafa inayich yonim miba'ad letzamayteich, which all that was not quoted in the Gemara. The only thing the Gemara quoted is, Se'arech ke'eder izin. So if you want to see the whole verse in English, it says, behold, you're beautiful, my love, beautiful. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves behind your veil. So that's also interesting, the behind the veil over here. Your hair is like a flock of goats, which again, I would advise men not using that as a pickup line, but sliding down from Mount Gilad. Excellent. So let's continue. It's like the hair. It's like the wavy hair coming down.
Okay, but Shirashir is full of allusions exactly. To every single part of a person's body from
right.
Feet to your toes, so we can pick up on any of those.
Eyes,
yeah.
Where are you going to stop? Forehead? How many different
So, let's continue. So the Gemara over here only...
And also vice versa. Why is it only... In other words, she describes him with all of his...
Right. So the big question over... Excellent. So the big question over here in the Gemara is, what is it talking about? Which means, what is the topic of this whole thing over here? For example, is this whole Gemara only telling me about Kriyat Shema? Or is this whole Gemara telling me about objective issues of Erva? Or is the Gemara telling me subjective issues of Erva? Do we end up accepting all of these opinions, or are these conflicting opinions? Which means we have a whole bunch of information, but the problem is, okay, now what are we supposed to do with all of this information? We did have in the very beginning, Rav being told by Rav Chista, sorry, was that Rav Chista? No, that was by Rav Sheshet, Ela be'ishto v'kriyat Shema. What's the issue over here? The issue is by one's own wife and by Kriyat Shema. But what was the topic? The topic was Tefach. So now, what is that Tefach? Is that Tefach of something which is normally uncovered? Right? Normally uncovered. And therefore, even a Tefach of something normally uncovered is the problem. Or is the Tefach of something which is normally covered? And therefore, a tefach of a woman, which is normally covered, that's an inappropriate kriyat shema. That's the Gemara doesn't tell us over here. If it's something which is normally covered, then I can go and say, oh, now the Gemara has given me a list of other things which are normally covered, and therefore, if these things are uncovered, that's the problem. But I'm saying, the Gemara as a whole over here, what I want you to appreciate, when a Gemara like this is inconclusive, just simply what it's telling us, you'll then realize that the Rishonim are going to feel free to interpret this in many different ways. Because of the lack of clarity. By the way, Rashi, and this some of you may find interesting, Rashi says, La'asta klule, remember that in the very beginning, if you're talking about looking, he says, im eshet ishi, if she is married. I could have said that the problem of looking is looking at any woman. But he says, no, with a married woman. And he's quite consistent. Shok, two lines later, be'eshet ish. Rashi, again, is limiting this to someone who's married. But by the way, these comments of Rashi don't make their way into most of the later opinions, but nonetheless, I find this pretty interesting that Rashi over here is telling us, no, we're talking about a problem of a man looking at someone else's wife. Yeah.
That's exactly the point, because if you go back to the Gemara, is it his own wife only or all women?
Well, he's talking, no, here it's Ishto. Here he's talking about his own woman. Okay. Now, the Rambam, and this is very important where he's writing this, the Rambam in source number 3 is writing in the laws of prohibited relationships. And he's not quoting this whole Gemara, he's quoting that one little line there in the middle. Let's read it. Ha'osa davim yichukot elu, harehu choshir al arayot. He had other lists, other things. Somebody does these things which are problematic, he's already suspected when it comes to sexuality. If a man should not make levity or any kind of winking or things like that with one of the arayot, one of the forbidden relationships. More levity. Right? V'yafilu lahariach b'samim sha'aleha. Ola habit biyafya asur. Now, of course, I would love to know what the word lahabit means, because lahabit is not the same word as lahistakel. So here we have another word we need to know what it means. What does lahabit mean?
It's a translation.
Okay, but let's continue. Before we ask anything else, let's read the whole Rambam, because the Rambam is going to tell us some things which maybe you'll find surprising. Umakin lemitkaven ledavar zeh makat mardut. Somebody who did this broke a rabbinic law, and somebody who has kavana. So he just now defined lahabit with kavana. So what does kavana mean? It means a person says hine mulchun mezumin. Right, I'm getting ready to have kavana to look at a woman. Now is he talking? Is lahabit mean? Would you translate this lahabit means to glance, or are we talking about to look leeringly? Is this gaze or this to stare? Is this a certain type of stare? What is he talking about? V'hamistakel afilu be'etzba ketana shel isha v'nitkaven lahanot k'misha nistakel b'makom hatoref. So therefore, if somebody is staring at another woman with intention, he says that is as if he's looking at a hidden part of her. V'afilu l'shmo kol ha'erva olerot sa'ara asur. And even to hear the voice or to see her hair would be prohibited. So again, is this any type? But it sounds like he makes a distinction. It sounds like he's saying that looking is only a type of looking, but hearing singing or seeing her hair would be prohibited under all circumstances. Halacha Gimel. V'advarim elu asurim b'chavei lavin. And these things are prohibited by Torah law. And then he writes, and now he uses the word histakel, umutar listakel b'pnei apnuya, but you're allowed to look at a single woman, ulavadka, what does ulavadka mean? To check her out. Bein betula, bein ba'ula, doesn't make a difference if she's single, kidei she'ir'eh imhi na'eh be'enav yisa'ena, to see if she is pleasant in his eyes and he can marry her. Ve'ein bezet sadisur, and there's nothing the matter with this. V'lo'od, elashir'er oi la'asot kein, this is worthwhile to do. Avalo yistakel derech znut. So he comes back again and he says, but you shouldn't look derech znut. So what is derech znut versus looking? I have no answers to this question. What's the difference between looking derech znut versus looking? So looking b'derech znut would be a certain type of looking, which is probably the type of looking that would make you feel uncomfortable that I said before. But looking at somebody, he's saying it's not only perfectly allowed, it's advisable. The Ravid has a real interesting comment here. A couple lines down, has Hasagat Ravid, but in Butta Katav Ravid, Chachamim Amru, Hait Tzurbim Rabbanan. Tzurbim Rabbanan means rabbinical students. The Azil Kedusha Itata, who are going to go get married, Lidaber Am Haaretz Behedya. He should, the next line. Even though that you're supposed to look, he says, but it may be wise for a rabbinical student who doesn't know that much about these things to ask an Am Haaretz to check her out also for. No, somebody wants to get married. Somebody wants to get married. The Rambam said not only you're allowed to look, that you should look, but the Ravid advises that you may, if you don't know so much about these things, you may want to. You know, listen, by the way, this could be a great service to open. You know, we will check out your dates for you. You know. Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. On the other hand, the Rambam writes in source 4, and please note where he's writing. This is Hilchot Kriyat Shema. He writes, "V'kol gufa isha erva, l'fichach lo yistakel b'gufa isha kishahu korei." A woman's entire body is considered to be an erva, but that's a pretty good definition now. The whole body is an erva, so therefore, a man should not look at a woman's body while he's saying Shema. V'yafilu ishto, but even by his wife, v'im hayim megula tefach migufa lo yikre kenegda, and if there is a tefach which is revealed. Again, it's not all that clear what we mean over here. Is it revealed of a place that normally covered? Even if there's a tefach which is revealed, then he should not read Shema in front of him. But by the way, because of this halacha, there are many poskim, including Rav Ozner, who is the posik of Bnei Brak, who says that men on planes should not get up and make a minyan, but they should sit in their seats looking down by the chair, because if you stand up, then you can see all the other women on the plane. Aside from the fact that, you know, of Chil Hashem, and aside from the fact that they're disturbing other people, and aside from everything else, he says, how can you stand up and say Shema? Because there will be many tfachim, which will be uncovered on a plane, and therefore he says that, you know, absolutely not should a person stand up and pray, you know, together in a place that you can see. And what's interesting over here is, the Rambam said two things. One thing that he said is the whole body is considered to be erva, but he also said, pay attention, lo yistakel b'gufa isha, kishu korei, which means as I'm saying Shema, I should not be looking at a woman, but if there is a tefach which is migula, I can't say it, even if I'm not looking. Do you understand the difference? Look, I can't look at a woman who's saying Shema, but if there's a tefach which is revealed, then I cannot say Shema within that place. I mean, other later posts will therefore say men who don't go to minyan or daven at home have to be very careful in terms of what is to be seen or what's uncovered in the house, because it could be things which are permitted for a person to walk around the house uncovered, but it's still nonetheless not appropriate to say Shema. By the way, despite all this, there's a very interesting law which is quoted in a tshuva from Rav Moshe, which we may or may not get to, which is also on the last page, where he quotes that if a man and a woman are in bed and they are touching one another, they can both turn their backs to one another under the blanket and each say Shema. Right. So therefore, they're not looking at one another, but he said they can each say Shema, even though there are many, many tfachim which not only may be uncovered, but they're even touching at that time. He says it's permitted to say Shema in such a case. So the Rav Moshe quotes that. Those of you who don't believe me, look at the very last page. Just one second. You know what? Let's leave that. I'll try to come back to that whole tshuva. Let's leave that right now. Now, notice the Rambam wrote in two different things. What did he not mention in source number 4? Yeah, he didn't say anything about the leg, he didn't say anything about the hair. So that's also interesting. In Hilchot Kriyat Shema, the Rambam left that part out. So that's going to lead us wondering why that was left out in this particular place. He said Kol Aguf, that is correct. Where did he mention the hair and the voice? He mentioned that in Hilchot Asurabiya, which means as far as the Rambam is concerned, in terms of the general prohibition of men looking at women, that is where it's listed, but it's not listed in terms of saying Shema, and we'll see a possible leniency with this as we continue. This law that we saw in number 3, you will find later on in source number 22 in the Shulchan Aruch, found in Evin HaEzer. There it talks generally about men, about what they should not be looking at. Source 22, Tzarech Adam L'Trochek Mi Anashim Ma'od Ma'od, V'Asur L'Krotz B'Yadav V'Raglav L'Ramoz B'Einav L'Ched Ma'arayot, V'Asur L'Schok Ima L'Kerosh Kinek, that's almost word for word the Rambam, O L'Habit B'Yofya, V'Afilu L'Riach B'Vsamim Shala Asur, which means a woman who is prohibited to a man, for example, a married woman. Now, by the way, this doesn't say a married woman can't put on perfume, although I'm sure that there will be poskim who will now say, oh, you can't wear perfume. But what this says is that the man should not be paying specific attention to the perfume. Because when they were doing the kfisa, they generally would find themselves in immodest positions. He shouldn't have been looking at the woman's clothing, which may be, because even that can lead to lustful thoughts. So this is interesting. This whole halakha is talking to men and trying to...
Of a woman that he knows,
correct. Afilu enam elaha. Shema yavol herba. Maybe he'll think about her. Paga isha bashuk, asol alecha chareha, elaratsu misalka litzdadin, ola acharav. And you can still see this sometimes in Jerusalem. V'lo ya'avor bepetach isha zona. No, it says he should. V'lo yavor petach isha zona. He should. Misalka, he should. No, he should. Afilu beruchok arba amot. V'mastakel afilu be'etzbak tana shel isha. Now, again, let's pay attention to how he phrases this. V'hamistakel be'etzbak tana shel isha uvinit kavein lehenot mimena. Again, here we have specific intention. As if he looked at her private parts. And if the person sees the hair or hears the voice but has kavana, then that person will get lashes. And there are also certain Torah prohibitions involved. So again, part of that Gemara made it to the Rambam and made it to the laws of Evin HaEzer. On the other hand, part of the laws made it to the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchot Kriyat Shema, which is in source number 15. But in Hilchot Kriyat Shema, the Mechaber adds something in that the Rambam did not have, which will take us back to our topic. What did he add in? Hair. 15. Sar shel isha shederkah lichsoto, and you have to love the way that's written now, hair of a woman which is normally covered, asur lekrot kenedo. He should not say Shema in front of. Which now takes us to a general kind of thing, which means something which is normally covered is where you cannot say Shema. And by the way, when we say Shema over here, it's not just Shema. It's Shema, and it's Shemona Esrei, and for that matter, it's any bracha. Haga, the Rama adds, afilo ishto. Aval bitulot shir darkan lelech pruot rosh mutar. And if there are single women who normally don't cover their hair, then it's allowed. Now that itself is very intriguing. Because if I'm going to say that a hair of a woman is something which is, by definition, erva, so then why should a single woman be different? And yet we're told in the Shulchan Aruch it rules that way. And Rama says, and it's also the part of the hair of a woman that comes out from her hair covering. Which means, what kind of hair is a problem? The hair which is normally covered. Which kind of hair is not a problem? Which isn't normally covered? What isn't normally covered? Even hair that comes out from the covering which one has. V'kolshken sar nachriot, and certainly sar nachriot, afil darkan lechsot, even if they normally cover it. And he quotes where that's from. I want to read the Mishnah Berurah, and then I'm going to go back to some of the earlier sources. Shir darka lechsoto, even if it's hair which she normally covers when she goes out, and in her house and the chatzer she doesn't. Now, why doesn't she cover it in her house and the chatzer? This is the first time, and we're 37 minutes into the shiur, except I started a little bit late, 32 minutes. This is the first time we've had any reference to what we learned last week. What did we learn last week? We learned that a woman does not have to cover her hair in her house, and she doesn't have to cover it in the chatzer. So here we're told, if a woman doesn't cover her hair in the chatzer, now what can, or the house, what can I then say? Well, it's not normally covered hair. So maybe then, a man in his house can say Shema with his wife's hair uncovered. So what does he? What does the Mishnah Berurah say? No, because it's considered normally covered. How do I know it's normally covered? It's normally covered outside. So it's normally covered outside. That's considered normally covered, even even though she's not obligated to cover it inside. So again, here we see very clearly that the two sugyot that we learned don't necessarily have that much to do with one another. Is that point clear? That she is not obligated to cover in the house, but he wants to say Shema, then he can't say Shema in front of her hair uncovered. Yeah. I think it's a very important question. I think it's a very important question, and it also, you know, who are all these laws being said to? Which means it's quite possible that all these laws that we read today are being said to the man. That when you say Shema, when you this is what, and it didn't talk any and it didn't say anything about how a woman should dress or not. I mean, so I'm saying that is definitely a possibility. Let us continue. Unless then you're going to throw into it a problem of lifnei iver. But I'm saying that that would be more indirectly. Okay. Thank you. Let's continue. Mikol makom, second line in source 16. Bichlal ervahi lekulei alma afilu babayit vasur sham lekrot negda. So the Mishnah Berurah then continues and says, and this is fascinating. He says, according to everyone, this would be considered erva. We'll see afterwards if this is the case. He says, according to everyone, this is considered to be erva, even though she's not obligated to cover it inside. So again, here we see how the 2 weeks just take us in two different directions, right? Imnit galek tzat mehem, even if a little bit is uncovered. Vidao yafilu im derech isha zu v'chavroteha ba'otom makom lelech begilei rosh b'shuk k'derech haprutzot asur. And he goes, and what if you live in a time and a place? And again, the Mishnah Berurah of the Chavetz Chaim died in 1933. You can look up in the archives of the New York Times, his death made the New York Times. Modern man, he knew already that women stopped covering their hair publicly, and he says, and even if women no longer cover their hair in the street, asur, And it's no different from the shok, which is also prohibited. And what's the shok according to him? The shok according to him is the thigh. And therefore, a woman is not allowed to uncover her thigh, no matter what the style is in that particular time and place. As was written in Sifkat and Bet. Kevin Shetzrichot L'Chzor HaSarah Mitzad HaDin. She's obligated to cover it. The Yesh B'zeh Yisur Torah. And now he quotes parenthetically, he goes to the other Gemara, and he quotes the thing about Parah Rosh Yisha, B'chal Shei Mechusa. And he goes back to the Gemara in Ketuvot, what we saw last time. V'gam kol b'not Yisrael ha-machzikot b'dat Moshe. And when he says the word, the phrase Dat Moshe, you realize where he's going. Nizarot mizeh mimot avotenima olam va'adata. And he's giving a little bit of Musar here. Why should he have to give Musar? Because a lot of women were no longer doing it. Right? Va'ad ata till this very day. Right? B'chlal ervahi. Va'asur l'krot k'negdam v'lo balama'it rak betulot shemutarot l'lech v'rosh pura. The only leniency that he mentions is for a woman who's single. And now we don't know exactly why that is. Is that because it was fundamentally never included? Or is that because subjectively, if they don't cover their hair, so it's not considered to be something which is erotic? And he comes hair a little bit stronger than what we understood from the Mechaber. And even hair that comes out of the hair covering, that depends on where you live, which now is an interpretation of Dat Yehudit. If the women in this particular time and place are careful that no hair comes out, then even the hair that comes out from underneath their hair covering is considered to be asur. Therefore, you can't say Shema. If they're not careful, that if it's something which women are not careful about, then a man would be allowed to say Shema or a bracha or kiddush or other things like that, because then they're not careful in that place. So again, this would be an application of Dat Yehudit, but the Mishnah Berurah is bringing the Dat Yehudit discussion back into this. And he's telling us that if a woman normally covers her hair, then it's considered to be erva. If she normally doesn't, or in that time and place it's not done, or not done in a particular way, then it's erva. But he wants to say that ultimately the hair is the same thing as the shok, and this is not based upon subjective thing, and he can never get to the point that it could be completely uncovered. I want to read Surah 17 because this is real interesting, and this will come out being very, very machmir, and I hope that you enjoy this. Sar nachrit. Sar nachrit is normally the way that you refer to a wig. Kri nachrit le hasa'er shenichtach ve'enu davuk lebisara. It's considered to be nachrit because it's cut and it's not part of her body. Right? So on a wig, rabbis didn't say that it's erva. And therefore it shouldn't be considered to be uncovered hair. But no, there are those who disagree. Even by a wig, say no, but lots of people disagree and say if a woman wears a wig, that's considered to be going with her hair uncovered because it looks like her hair. We'll go to the bottom line here. He quotes lenient opinion, strict opinions. V'katav od sham de'im ein minhag ha'makom she'yachu anashim b'peyat nachrit, b'vaday hadin im ha'machirim b'zeh mishumarit a'ayin. If one woman wants to be frum, and she wants to wear a wig, and all the other women around don't wear a wig, he's saying it's usher. Because, I'm not picking on you.
No.
Yeah. Right. That's what he's saying. It's marit ayin, because no one's going to know that she's really wearing a wig. If people don't know that it's a wig, it's marit ayin, and it's a problem in terms of shema, it's a problem in terms of priyat rosh, and he ends up that wigs, if everyone's wearing wigs, it's something else. He says there are lenient opinions, but even according to lenient opinions, if you're the only one wearing a wig, the Mishnah Berurah ends up that that's a problem. I already told you last week that Rav Avadya and the Gra and all kinds of people did not like wigs at all. Let's look at 18. 18 is the Aruch HaShulchan.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at the Aruch HaShulchan. He's also going to link the two sugyot together. Aruch HaShulchan, those of you who don't know or don't remember, was a contemporary of the Mishnah Berurah. His name was Rabbi Epstein. He died a little bit earlier. He had the bad luck of writing a great book right before the Mishnah Berurah wrote his book. And even though it depends which volume, different volumes were published at different times, but they were basically living at the same time. unlike the Mishnah Berurah, he was actually a posek. The Mishnah Berurah wasn't. Mishnah Berurah was a Rosh Hashiva. He dealt with real life a lot more. And his book was actually initially much more accepted. And still among poskim, it's considered to be a major, if not the major book of that period. He died a bit earlier. Mishnah was 1933. He probably died around 1911 or so, but I'm guessing. His son is the Torah Tumima. Katvu Rabotenu Balei Shulchan Aruch B'Sif Bed Se'ar Shel Isha Derkah L'Chsoto Asur L'Kro Kenegdo. The rabbis were on the Shulchan Aruch. A woman's hair is normally covered. You can't say Shema in front of. Afilu Ishto Afilu Bitulot Shadarkan Lelech B'Purot. Sorry. Aval Bitulot Shadarkan Lelech B'Purot Rosh Mutar. V'Udin Asay Rosh Shel Nashim Sheregilin Latzed Chutz Litzmatan. So, single women who don't cover their hair. And even women's hair, which comes out of the covering, all that's fine. Ukolshkein se'ar nachrit, and certainly a wig, afilu darkan lechsot, even if it's normal, the wig is covered, adkan l'shono, and here he's quoting earlier sources. V'zeo shenit b'er ba'evna Ezra. Now what he did something interesting now. Now he jumped to the other place, Evna Ezra, where we said the Rambam was in two places. Now he's jumping to the other place. D'gam d'pnuyot lo yachlu b'gilei rosh, and it is written that even single Jewish women should cover their hair, or should not go with their hair completely uncovered. He says, no, when it says single there, it doesn't mean single, it means unmarried women. Unmarried women would be divorced or others, they should say, that's what it means there. Bibu'ulot, kamo almanot, v'grushot. V'lo bitulot. Right, so he quotes sources on that. V'yesh mishakatav, da'af bitulot lo te'kishesaris sotrot v'lo klot. And there are those who say that even a single Jewish girl should go at least with her hair in braids. So that we saw last time. V'yesh omrim d'b'chatzer mutarot kol anashim gam anesuot lelech b'giloi rosh. And some say, and it doesn't have to say the house, even the chatzer, right, even the yard, she can go with her hair uncovered. V'ayim be'ebner z'imgetav uv'zohar naso, and we know from the Zohar, we also saw that last week, he was very, very strict about this, and so on. V'anashim abot mimakamot she'ein darkon l'galot l'makom she'darkon l'galot v'ein dat l'chzor mutarot l'galotan. And if a woman is going to move from a place or a community that they used to cover it even inside, and now she lives in a community that they don't, she's allowed to be makel, and she doesn't have to keep her old custom. Sif Zion, and this is the one that is very often quoted, and we'll see if it was misquoted or quoted, and we'll see what he says. V'ata bo'u v'nitzvach. Now we can come and we can scream, al prutzot dorenu, on the level of the modesty in our generation, but avinotenu harabim, due to our incredible sins, shezeh shanim rabot, it's already been for a long time, shenifritzu benot Yisrael, nifritzu means both prutza, but prutza means to burst out, I mean, they broke boundaries of customs, benot Yisrael, but avon zeh, v'holchot b'gilui arosh, and he says, women today, he's telling us, here's the Av Basin of Navarduk, telling us, that women are going with their hair uncovered. V'kol mashet sa'aku al zeh, hu lelo lazar. And anything that the rabbis have screamed about this has not helped. V'lo lehoil. It's not, by the way, to tell you the truth, not only has it helped, it may not even be positive. V'ata pashta ha-mispachat she'anusot olchot b'sarotem kimo ha-bitulot. Oy lanu she'olta b'yameinu kach. Woe unto us that we live in such a generation that married women walk around the same way that the single women do. What? It's a term used in Vayikra by Nega. It's this leprosy, this plague. This plague has spread. Mihu, however, al kol panim ledina, regarding the law, nira shemutar lanu l'tpalel uvarech neged rosheim amagulot. So what did he say till now? Did he say women did the Aruch HaShulchan say women no longer have to cover their hair? Did he say that? No, not at all. What does he say? He goes, well, if they're no longer covering their hair, al kol panim ledina nira shemutar lanu l'tpalel uvarech neged rosheim amagulot. He goes, but if the women no longer cover their hair, then you can say, you can daven, you can say Shema, you can say Kiddush, say Brachot, in front of their uncovered hair. Kevin sha'ata rubam holchot kein, because most women walk around that way. V'have kimukamot hamagulim b'gufa. And this has become one of the uncovered parts of a woman's body. U'kamasha katzav ha-mordechai b'shem ha-ravya. And it's like what the Mordechai said in the name of the Ravya. So let's look at the Rav Yah. He couldn't because the Rav Yah was not printed, but he knew that the Mordechai quoted him. Let's look at the Rav Yah. Let's go back to source. He's saying that in his generation, uncovered hair is no longer considered something which is erotic. And that has nothing to do with the woman's obligation that she still has to cover their hair. If it's no longer something which is considered erotic, so therefore there's not a problem of davening and saying any kind of brachot. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. Source number 11, the Rav Yah. Pasak b'halachot gedolot, to call hani damrin and hacha. It says in the Halachot Gedolot that all the things mentioned here, tefach be'isha erva, filu hi'ishto, v'isha cheret, filu davar katan mitefach, v'chein shok be'isha erva, v'chein sar be'isha erva, all these things, v'chein kol be'isha erva, kol hani asur l'krod kriyat shma kenegdam. So first of all, he told us something real interesting. And what's that? That all of these laws that we just now mentioned, all of them should have been written in Hilchot Kriyat Shma. That all of these laws are said about Kriyat Shma, not general laws, they're all Kriyat Shma laws. V'chein pirish Rabbeinu Chananel. V'omer ani d'ta'ama d'afal gav d'ein hakol nir'eh l'ayin mihu hir her ika. And he goes, I think the reason is that even though a voice is not something you see, it still causes thoughts. V'kol hadvrim she'eskanu l'mala, and all of these things that I mentioned, le'erva dafka b'davar she'ein regilot li'galot. All of these things are specifically by things which are not normally revealed, but by a single woman who walks around with her hair uncovered, we don't have a problem. Because that's not going to lead to thoughts. And also regarding her voice that we're used to. Now, the voice that we're used to is a very interesting point, and this goes back to the Mordechai's quote of this. When it said, "Kol be'isha erva," a woman's voice is erva. What did it mean by that? Did it mean that a man can never hear a woman speak? Or does it mean that a man can never hear a woman sing? So now all of you are going to tell me, of course it means sing. It doesn't mean voice. He's not assuming that. And this becomes very interesting. You know, for example, if you look at the next source, the Yamshel Shlomo, the Maharshal, he writes, V'gami varsha asur l'shloch shalom le'isha. This is based in Kedushin, where the Gemara says a man should not be too familiar with other people's wives. A man's allowed to ask another. He shouldn't send my regards, but he can ask how is she doing. A man should never hear a woman's singing voice, but a talking voice is allowed. Now, if you would have asked me on the first Gemara what it was talking about, I would have said it's talking about singing voice. It's not talking. I would have agreed completely with the Marshal. The Rav Yah doesn't agree with the Maharshal. What did the Rav Yah say? The reason I can hear a woman sing, a talking voice, is because that we're used to. Now that turns the law into a... Correct. That turns this whole law into a subjective law, which means, according to the Yamshel Shlomo, why can I hear a woman talk? No. According to the Maharshal, why can I hear a woman talk? Because it was never prohibited. It was never prohibited. There's no problem with it. According to the Rav Yah, why can I hear it? Because we're used to it. Now, that creates an incredible opening, that opinion of the Rav Yah. If you look at source number 10, where it's underlined, the Sefer Yireim says, V'mashmul kol be'isha erva dechiv kolech arev. He's quoting the verse, your voice is arev, your voice is pleasant, pirish kol shel shir. What are we talking about? A singing voice, right? That should have been simple. Now, also, if you look at the Yireim and you continue there, he writes, "Le'inyan kriyat shma hilkach asur lo makriyat shma o davar k'dusha b'shmiat kol shir shalisha." You should not be allowed to say shma or any davar k'dusha with a woman's voice. And by the way, what did he just tell us? What kind of voice? A singing voice. Uvavanoteinu bein agoyim anu yoshim. He goes, we live in a non-Jewish area. Ve'et lasot Hashem hifru toratecha. And sometimes you have no choice; you have to break Torah to keep Torah. Eit lasot Hashem. You have to do that something for God, hifru taratecha, break the Torah. Hilkach ein anu nizharim milulmod nishmiat kol nashim aramiyot. We don't stop ourselves from learning just because there will be women outside the Beit Midrash who are singing. And over here he's talking specifically, apparently what happened is that where they lived, the non-Jewish women would, as they were doing their chores, I would assume, I'm just giving you a scene, they would sing. And now what do we do? Do we all the men have to stop learning now because now they'll learn, or do they keep on learning? He says, no, we keep on learning anyway, and we're already used to it. We're used to the situation. So this is more interesting even, because, right? You understand why? Because if I take the Rav Yoz approach, what did the Rav Yoz say? Oh, why can I hear women talk? Because we're used to it. But he's even allowing women singing because we're used to it. Because what are we going to do? We're going to stop learning? So again, he's not talking over here that he was forced by the KGB to go to the opera, like I was. I was forced by the KGB. It's true. Single may not be that much of an issue one way or the other, because even single, the woman would presumably be in nida unless she went to mikveh, and I think most women singing don't go to mikveh so that they can sing. I mean, that's what I would assume. But, yeah. That's very interesting. And that's part of the... Okay. If you want, I'll talk about singing another time. We'll have to obviously come back to a lot of these sources, but I don't want to completely go there. The reason why we're talking about singing now is because of this whole subjective approach being brought in specifically about singing. Or not just subjective, something that we're used to. So now once you saw the Rav Yah and now you saw the Urayim, we can go back to the Aruch HaShulchan. Where he quotes the Rav Yah and he says, number 18, towards the end of it, Ukamasha Katava Mordechai Bishem Rav Yah, Bisof Paragimel, Vizelushono, called him Shirskanula Erva Dafka Badavasha Inrigilot Lagalot, Aval Bitula, Rigila, Begilo Sayar, Lochashin de Leka Hirhur, Akad the Shono, Vikavan Shetslainu Gaman is Suot Kane, Memela de Leka Hirhur. So he says, he quotes the Rav Yah and he says, you know, just like there, the single woman went without the hair, which is very, very, very interesting. Because I could have said no, that, and it's I know it's circular what I'm about to say, that a single woman's hair, because it's never covered, is not erva by definition. But it's only a married woman is a problem, and that is erva. But he doesn't go in that direction. He says no. A single woman logically is no different from a married woman. You can't tell by looking at somebody's hair what it is, and therefore, if hair is something which is a problem, it's not just because she's married. And he says just like he says that we're used to. We're allowed to say Shema in front of a single woman's hair, therefore we can also do it in front of a married woman's hair. Rav Moshe Feinstein accepts this psak of the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay? How do I know this? Because he says so. What's the context? How high a mechitza has to be. Rav Moshe says a mechitza should be this high. Now, why do you think Rav Moshe said it should be this high? Because he was worried how women dress in America. Now, if he's worried how women dress, they're also going with their hair uncovered. But when it comes to this part and up, he thinks that it won't be a problem to say Shema and Brachot in front of. But from this part and down, if it's not covered, then he would be a little bit more concerned. If anybody ever listens to the tape, I'm pointing to the neck and down. Yes. Even up over here. So let's look. He's talking about mechitza and shul. So you want it over the head? Because he thinks that the hair is allowed to be seen. I mean, doilies are very impressive, but they don't cover all that much.
So why were they... When a woman stands?
Yeah, when a stand. Yeah, so in source 19, Hinei bedvar mechitza shebein anashim lanashim, vadei min ha-ra'ui kishevshar tov lasod kavoa shelo yitru anashim klal. It's best if you can do it in a way that one won't see each other at all. Right? And especially where we live, a lot of women go with their hair uncovered and their arms uncovered. We can't really complain. We won't be successful. But if you can't, I've already written before, is Arbe Shanim Shetzrich Liot Gavoa Ad Acher Haktefayim. It has to be at least up to the shoulder length. Shehu, and then he gives an exact measurement, what he thinks it should be. Shezeo She'ur Midin Mechitza. That makes it a kosher Mechitza. V'gam Imo Yubizrot Megulot Yiloi Teru. But if anything under the shoulder will be uncovered, you're not going to see. Uvidvar Hasear, Kevin Shushatadchak, She'ein Menichin Ba'ofen Acher, Yesh Lesmoch, Alamikilim, Harif, Harambam. Now let's go back to, we remember that now, in source number 4, the Rambam did not include hair. The Rambam only included hair and singing in his laws of Yisuri B. He didn't include it in the laws of prayer at all. And by the way, I'm not convinced this is the best proof over here of Rav Moshe, but he continues afterwards quoting the Aruch HaShulchan, Uvizmanenu, Shavonot HaRabim, Rav HaNashim, Achopi Perot Rosh, Afshu B'Yisur, and he says that one can rely on this. At the very, very end, he says, if someone wants to be machmir and turn away and not look, so they can do that as well. But Lemaisa Rav Moshe over here is lenient regarding hair being uncovered. By the way, what's interesting is that according to Rav Moshe, one thing has nothing to do with the other. Let me illustrate that. Around two-thirds of the way down in Rav Moshe, the second word of the line where it starts to be underlined, it says, V'amai. V'amai lo v'yakra, why did this Gemara not bring the verse, Para Rosha Isha? Why did it bring the same verse from Sota that the Gemara in Ketuvot brought? Why did it bring this other verse? I can say, here I know woman's hair has to be covered. Why did it quote that verse? There we learned that a woman can't go with her hair uncovered. And based on that, it should be a place which should be covered. So based on the, that would establish the hair as erva. The fact that a woman cannot walk with her hair uncovered has nothing to do with erva. Rav Moshe, I know that everybody learned differently and everybody disagreed. Rav Moshe just now said, what's he really telling us? The two sugya that we learned are not necessarily the same. That sugya is how a married woman behaves herself. This sugya is what are considered to be inappropriate things for Kriyat Shema, or maybe more general. But he's telling us that they're not necessarily the same exact sugya. And he said, and his proof is they brought a different proof text because they're not necessarily related. We have to wind down. So source number 20, Rav Moshe goes into a tshuva where he tries to define different types of prohibition for men and women on what they can look at or what they couldn't look at. One of the sugyot that he has to consider is our sugya regarding Kriyat Shema. He also quotes a verse from this week's parsha, and what's that? V'lo tatur acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem, where the Gemara says, acharei einechem, has to do with hir horei erva. A person should not follow their eyes and have lustful thoughts, which is a verse which applies to both men and women equally, in case you wanted equality over here. The Rav Moshe does distinguish between lustful thoughts, or lustful looking, non-lustful looking, and I'm not going to read the whole tshuva over here, even though it's probably worthwhile. I do want to make reference to one last tshuva, which is almost nothing, which what we learned about today, but it's a good postscript. In source 21, Rav Moshe was asked about taking a subway and a bus, where they're very crowded. Ubeinyan halicha b'subway ubebus. Ubebuses. Right. B'sha she'if shali zaher minigia v'dechifa b'nashim. Mitzat hadochak. He says, as a person, he was asked, can I get on a bus or a subway when they're so crowded I will not be able to stop myself from touching women or having women touch me? Now, touching over here means that you have no choice because it's so full. So what's Rav Moshe going to say? Umidavar halicha b'subway b'buses b'zman she'olchim b'nei adam la'avodah la'avodotam shenimtzim sham anashim v'nashim. This, by the way, in terms of our separate buses and back of the bus, in front of the bus, Rav Moshe writes, people going to work, am I allowed to go to work during rush hour? He writes, Mitzad hanigiyava dechifa benashim, az leka shum isur. There is no prohibition. Bishum de'ein zederech ta'ava v'chiba. Because you're not doing this out of lustful behavior. And Rav Moshe, by the way, said the same thing before in terms of looking. It's disgusting. That's something else, which is that's why it's allowed. But he said the same thing in terms of lustful looking, which means the type of looking which isn't allowed is, again, the looking that you need kavana for, which means looking and thinking that one wants to, one has erotic thoughts about that other person, that would certainly be not allowed. Somebody who's looking at the other person's body and enjoying it, that would not be allowed. To look at somebody, to see somebody, would be allowed. So if Moshe draws that line between different types of looking and perhaps different which type of prohibition, all that's in the previous tshuva, once having said that, we get to this. Now, what about not just looking in a lustful way? What about touching in a lustful way? He goes, well, touching, if it's not lustful, is not a problem. Which means, are you allowed to go to a doctor who's the opposite gender? Yes. Can you go to get your hair cut with somebody who's the opposite gender? Yes. He's not saying these things. I'm saying these things. Why? Because any time that it's not going to be a lustful touch, and by the way, if your doctor touches you in a lustful way, you can make a lot of money on a lawsuit. Okay? So he continues and he says, "Ein shum isur mishum de'ein zederech ta'ava v'chiba. V'kol isur negiya barayot." The whole prohibition is shesovahu b'lav d'lav t'tikruvu. That's only derech ta'ava. Skipping a bit, al kol panim ledina b'nashim acherot af be'eshet ish uvenidot v'nachriot leki isur shelo b'derech ta'ava l'kuli alma. All these cases, there's no prohibition. U'lechein lo shayach l'chush. He goes, there's no problem with it. When you're going to work, even though people are pushing and this and it's crowded and you can't stop, he goes, all of this is allowed because it's not derech tava v'chiba. Next paragraph. And it's also no problem to sit in the next seat next to when there's no other place to sit. The gamkin ain't the derech tava v'chiba. Also, this is not derech ta'ava v'chiba. Ve'im ishto nida, kishetzerech l'shev duchukim, yesh ulay la'asur l'beit Yosef. And he goes, if it's your own spouse, and she is a nida at that point, and then he says, maybe there is a problem. Avakivin sherov achonim ashen shesuvrika shaf, agam l'beit Yosef, in burli isur defshar, shaf b'yishiva smuchim, en l'chush l'kavanat hada'ah, he just now allowed a married couple together to sit next to one another, even though at that particular time she may be a nida. Then he continues and he says something interesting. Aval im yodea shahu yavoli dehirhur. He says, you happen to know that you're a sick person, and you know that you're going to have lustful thoughts. You look forward to getting on that sweaty, crowded train. Yesh lo limanami lechet. You should not get on the train then. As im ein nachutzlo, if it's not really important, the im uchrach lelech, as gamkein la'avodato. But if you have to go to work, ein lo asur lo af by gavna, you should still go. Which means Rav Moshe is not giving this guy an excuse not to go to work. V'itchazek lasiach dato mehen, be strong. Ulaharher be divrei Torah and think good thoughts, think Torah thoughts. He continues and he writes, v'im yodea shetiv ora. If you know that you're a particular sick individual, v'yavo mizeh lidei kishui eiver, and you know that you're going to get an erection from this, asur lo lelech as gam la'avodato, you should not go to work. You should stay home. So I'm saying, Rav Moshe, again, writes a fascinating tshuva. If you're a sick person, then you know what? You should not be going on the bus at all. If you're a healthy person, it's okay. You're allowed to go on the bus. You're allowed to sit next to one another. You're allowed to even be pushed by the opposite gender, because all of these things are not allowed. Again, this was not directly the conclusion of what we've learned today, but I thought nonetheless you'd find this as an interesting source.